So we're continuing. You're here. Business dealing with the devotee, the glories of devotional service. In chapter 9. And all other forms of yoga, in karma yoga and jnana yoga, so much depends upon the living entity's own power. But in bhakti yoga, especially when one is completely depending on Krishna, and Krishna reciprocates with that mood of the devotee, and one is not limited by his own power, but one is limited by Krishna, who is unlimited. So the essence, as we heard in text 22 of the 9th chapter, Ananya chintayantu mam ye jana paripasate kecha nitya vyuktanam yoga kshemam vahamyaham. Those who worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. And a little earlier in that chapter, also in text 14, satatam kirtayantu mam yatantas cha vibhavata namashyantas chimam bhaktya nitya yukti upasate. These are the activities of the pure devotees as described in the previous verse, who have taken shelter of Krishna's internal energy. What do they do? What are their activities? Satatam kirtayanto mam. Directly, this is Krishna describing the activities of the pure devotees. They are always chanting Krishna's glories. Mam, Krishna says. Directly, Krishna's glories. Yatantas cha jihavrata. They're endeavoring with great determination to serve Krishna. Because their consciousness is focused on Krishna and they have no bahu shaka, they have no many branches, bhavavayanam. They have no branches of extraneous activities in their consciousness. Their consciousness is powerfully focused in Krishna's service. Dhrida vrata, with great, great determination. That means that they are tasting great happiness from satatam kirtiyantam. From chanting Krishna's glories, they are experiencing such happiness that they are very, very determined to please Krishna in serving Him. And then namashyantas tamam bhaktya nitya yuktu pasate. They are continuously they're offering obeisances, and the devotees are always engaged in serving Krishna. And their minds are focused on Him, as described in this 22nd verse. And how does Krishna reciprocate with them? He carries yoga kshemam vahamyaham. He carries what they lack and preserves what they have. So this is the glory of devotional service. And we've been hearing more about this so special relationship between Krishna and His devotees. Patram Krishnam Pramtayam. Thus Krishna is asking for one leaf, one flower, one fruit, a little water, and then what happens? He accepts that if it is offered with devotion. And even if one isn't on the level of just to do exactly what Krishna wants, even if one does what one likes to do himself, yad karosi rajnasi, yad jahosi vidati. If one just offers all the work and the fruit to Krishna, even though he is doing what he likes to do, and in the next verse, if he fixes his mind on Krishna, yes, I am doing this for Krishna, then the result is one gets vimukta. What does vimukta mean? Special liberation, not just ordinary liberation, but he gets bhakti, that is that special liberation. So nishkam karma, or working without attachment to the fruit, dutifully working with mind fixed on Krishna, also brings one to the platform of bhakti, although in and of itself isn't bhakti, but it is bhakti in the sense that it leads one to bhakti. So how glorious is this process? Even if one just does what one likes to do in opposite to Krishna, how glorious is that devotee, and how glorious is the process of devotional service, because it evokes Krishna's mercy upon the devotee. And how fortunate that if Krishna decides to bestow his mercy on a devotee, how fortunate that devotee is. And then Krishna explains even more, Samoham Savabhute Shu, Name Dveshos Ina Kriya, Yeva Janti Sumam Bhaktya, Maya Tateshu Tapyaham. That Krishna is equal to everyone, but he is not equal in his reciprocation with his devotees. For his devotees, he gives them special care and special attention. He doesn't reciprocate yeye tamam prapadyante. He takes care of these exalted devotees whose minds are always fixed upon him and who have no other desire except his pleasure. He takes such special care of his devotees. He doesn't act as the super soul in his relationship with them. He acts as Bhagawan, who is in the devotee, and the devotee will live in him, in Krishna. Now the next verse, the point of Krishna's how he deals with his devotees who are so situated is described even more wonderfully in text 30 and 31. Api chet sudaracharo vajate mam ananyava sadur evya samantavya samyagva vyasita hisya. Api chet sudaracharo, even if one commits the most abominable activity. Achar means activity. Durachar means horrible activities. And when you add sudara, su to the duracharo, it is the most abominable activities. So if one is a devotee, and somehow or another, of course, devotees don't commit abominable activities. But here Krishna is speaking of the glories of devotional service. That if one is a devotee who is fully fixed in Krishna's service, always meditating on Krishna, even somehow or another, although practically speaking it's impossible, if due to his previous conditioning he commits the most abominable activities, sudarachana, if he's bhajate mamananyabhak, worshipping Krishna Ananyabhak without deviation, then sadhur eva. That he is certainly a sadhur. Samantavya. Krishna saying, you must certainly think of him as a sadhur. Samyagya vasita hisya. Because he is determined, completely determined in his devotional service. Always when we preach about this verse, which glorifies devotional service and the purity of devotional service, we always talk about the other side also. That doesn't mean that one can perform horrible activities or improper activities and sinful activities and say, Krishna says, I'm a sadhu, and if you say I'm not a sadhu, you're committing aparad. No, that's not the meaning of that. Although, Prabhupada explains in the purport, first I'll read Prabhupada's translation, even if one commits the most abominable action, if he is engaged in devotional service, he is to be considered saintly because he is properly situated in his determination. In a few moments we'll explain what that properly situated in his determination is and why he's considered a sadhu. But we'll read here from Prabhupada's purport beginning on page 495, just in the a little above the verse Bhagavati Chaharal Vananya Jaita, above that, halfway through the paragraph, The word Sadhar Eva, Eva, he is saintly, a very emphatic. They are a warning to the non-devotees that because of an accidental fall down, a devotee should not be derided. He should still be considered saintly, even if he has accidentally fallen down. And the words Mantavya is still more emphatic. If one does not follow this rule, suspicion Mantavya means you should think in this way. So if one does not, Mantavya means, if one does not follow this rule and disobeys Krishna's instruction to think in this way, and one derides a devotee for his accidental fall down, then one is disobeying the order of the Supreme Lord. The only qualification of a devotee is to be unflinchingly and exclusively engaged in devotional service under the order of his spiritual master. I once heard Prabhupada answer a question, one in Melbourne, I think it was in 1975, after Prabhupada's lecture, Prabhupada called for questions. And one devotee raised his hand, and he wasn't someone I knew. He wasn't from Melbourne, but he had longish hair and a little bit of a beard, not very long hair. But he was disaffected from ISKCON clearly, and he was he had something on his mind. So he asked Prabhupada in a very very pompous, proud mood. He said, "What if someone is a brahmana and he falls down? He's living in the temple and he falls down." And he leaves. And then he comes back. Don't you think it would be better to engage him in some menial service like washing pots rather than to re-engage him in his old service? I don't know actually what he was thinking, but it was, very peculiar. So when someone asked a question like that to Prabhupada that was so pointed, everyone tensed a little bit. And Prabhupada explained that he took the question actually very seriously. And he explained that it is up to the spiritual master to decide whether the disciple is innocent or guilty. And whether the spiritual master judges him innocent or guilty will determine how he is placed and what his fate is. So that means that if one is unflinchingly, actually in fact, unflinchingly and exclusively engaged in devotional service, and he's trying his best sincerely under the order and protection of the spiritual master, even if he does something improper, the spiritual master will keep his merciful mood towards him. And therefore that devotee will be rectified very quickly. But if the spiritual master, who is actually an ocean of mercy, judges great impropriety on the part of the disciple and cuts, then that person is not sadhu eva anymore. He's certainly not a sadhu. Because it is the determination to be fixed in Krishna's service, regardless of what is going to happen to him due to his improper activities, that type of repentance, that is what is purifying. Now, Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur explains, I'll read some of his purport, his commentary along with Baladev Dhyabhusa. In the last verse, I said I am equal with everyone. But even if my devotees perform improper acts, I don't reject them. Krishna takes personal, unequal interest with his devotees. This devotee has no other attachment to karma or jnana, and he has one pointed attention to Krishna. If someone sees a person's behavior like this, acting sudaracharo, improperly, how could one think of him as a sadhu? Krishna says, Mantavya, you should think in this way as a sadhu, eva only. Now that doesn't mean that we should sentimentally just think anything that a devotee does because he's a devotee is a sadhu, but this is showing the potency of devotional service, how it is so uplifting. And in the next verse it will explain on how the result of devotional service on such a person. And he says, in this regard, you should always think of him as a sadhu, eva only. In this regard, my order is the proof, because Krishna has said sadhur eva. That is the proof that he is a sadhu. And Arjuna says, when he's worshipping, he's a sadhu. But when he's enjoying nonsense, he's a sadhu. He is not a sadhu. And Krishna says, no. He's only a sadhu. In every regard, he's a sadhu, because he is properly resolved to serve me. Because of his determination to only serve Krishna, he is a sadhu. And this is the quote of the person's mentality that makes him a sadhu. I'm unable to give up this improper, sinful, sudaracharo activities. And I'm going to have to go to hell because of this. But even if I am in hell, suffering, I'll never give up devotional service to Krishna. So this, because of this determination, Krishna keeps him as a sadhu. Although that person may have to accept, or will have to accept, unless Krishna decides to change it, he will have to get the resultant reaction of his impure activity, yet it doesn't affect his determination to keep fully engaged in Krishna's service and never stop serving Krishna. I may have to go to hell, I may have to suffer so much, but wherever I am, I will serve Krishna. So it's that determination that makes him sadhu. So Krishna here is showing the incredible potency of being fixed in his service as described before. If one thinks, again, I'm going to do a sinful activity, sadhur eva, I am a sadhu. What is that? That is namaparad. Namno baladyasya hipaptabudhi navidyate tasya yamar shudhi. That if one has that mentality, that, oh, I am a sadhu, I am a devotee, and therefore I'm going to do this, I'm going to commit sudarachar, and act improperly, then that is the worst of all offenses. And even if one is taken to the court of Yamaraj, one cannot be free from that namaparad. So this is talking about a very sincere soul who is fixed in Krishna's service very sincerely, but somehow or another, due to his previous conditioning, something happens. And therefore, he falls down. Still, because of his determination and due to his deep repentance, thinking, I'm a black spot, this will be described later. He's thinking, not, I am Sadhareva, and oh, you criticize me? This is aparad. He's not thinking like that. Rather, he's thinking, I'm a black spot in the society of devotees. I'm so fallen and so rascal. I'm such an embarrassment to the devotees. I'm going to have to suffer for this so much, but yet please let me always be engaged in service. That consciousness makes him sadhu, and that purifies him. Baladev, the Vidyabhusana, who says, pure devotion controls Krishna even to the extent that even if his pure devotee performs an abominable act, Krishna uplifts him and he should be considered sadhu. He doesn't take shelter of any other demigod. He takes shelter of me, because it is again this focusing on the consciousness of Krishna as the only shelter is so powerful. In this situation, the person should be considered a sadhu on the order of Krishna. On Krishna's instruction, he should be considered a sadhu, or else it is an offense. Why is he a sadhu? because he's completely determined to perform devotional service to Krishna, and that determination is very good. Then in the next verse, Kipram Bhavati Dharmatma. Very quickly he becomes righteous. He becomes Dharmatma. Kipram Bhavati. Very quickly he becomes righteous. So due to that determination, due to his focus on Krishna, due to his understanding that he's committed improper activities, due to that humility born of that, of his sincerity, and due to his understanding that he's going to have to suffer for this, and due to his determination to just simply keep serving Krishna regardless of what his situation is in, then Chipram Bhavati Dharmatma. Then very quickly he becomes righteous. Krishna, as Prabhupada, as Baladeva Nibhusana Prabhu explains in that purport, that Krishna's commitment, what we're talking about here, this section is about Krishna's commitment to his devotees. And Krishna's commitment to his devotee is so great that he uplifts them and refuses that that devotee be any, be considered anything else but a sadhu. And Prabhupada very clearly puts, on the other hand, one should not misunderstand that a devotee in transcendental devotional service can act in all kinds of abominable ways. This verse only refers to an accident due to the strong power of material connections. Devotional service is more or less a declaration of war against the illusory energy. As long as one is not strong enough to fight the illusory energy, there may be an accidental fall down. But when one is strong enough, he is no longer subject to such fall downs as previously explained. The point is, this is a glorification. This verse glorifies Krishna's commitment to his devotees. Therefore, we should become encouraged more and more and more to become this type of ananya bhakti devotee. And when we find ourselves unable to reach to that height of devotional service, we should, if we are very fortunate, we should understand our lack and sincerely cry and beg Krishna and the devotees to help us come to that stage. But it is not cheap. Chipram Bhavati Dharmatma. Very quickly he becomes righteous. Shashvak Chanti Nagatshiti. And he attains lasting peace. Kaunteya Pratijanihi Name Bhakta Pranashiti. O son of Kunti, declare it boldly that my devotee never perishes. Again, this is Krishna's commitment to his devotees. And in this regard, we tell the story of why Krishna says, O son of Kunti, declare it boldly that my devotee never perishes. Why does Krishna ask the son of Kunti, Kanteya Patidani, why does he ask Arjuna to declare it boldly? He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Why doesn't he himself declare it boldly? So the answer is that Krishna sometimes tells lies. And sometimes Krishna doesn't keep his promise. And one example is on the Battle of Kurukshetra, Krishna promised to not take part and lift arms in support of the Pandava dynasty, that he would only be the charioteer of Arjuna. But then Bhishma, on one day of the battle, he promised, because Krishna had tricked him, Bhishma had some arrows. He was holding some arrows that were meant to kill the five Pandavas. And he was going to use them the next day. They were specially sanctified to be able to kill the five Pandavas. But Krishna understood Bhishma's determination. And he said, and actually he gave those arrows to Duryodhana, the whole. Duryodhana knew, he was trying to force Bhishma to to get to unleash all his power against the Pandavas. So Duryodhana succeeded one day, and he made Bhishma vow that he was going to kill all 5 Pandavas the next day. So he had these arrows. So Duryodhana said, "Let me hold them overnight for the safety, to make sure that no one gets those arrows." So Krishna knew this, and he sent, I'm not sure if it was Yudhisthira or Arjuna. Who was it? Either Yudhisthira or Arjuna, he sent them to Duryodhana at night, and he said, you owe me one favor. Yes, whatever you want, even if you offer my, even if this point, even Duryodhana, they were such Kshatriyas, with such honor, even at this point, if you ask for my head, or me to surrender the whole kingdom to you, you're begging for me now? Yes, I will do it all. What do you want? Oh, I want those 5 arrows. So when Duryodhana heard Arjuna's request, and he gave him the 5 arrows, he understood that Krishna was behind this. So when he informed Bhishma of this, Duryodhana informed Bhishma, Bhishma said, "I'm going to fight so hard, I'm going to kill Arjuna tomorrow. And the only way he could possibly be saved is Krishna himself takes up arms." But Krishna had promised not to take up arms to protect any of the Pandavas. So he said, "I will force him to break his promise." So this is written in the 9th chapter of the 1st canto of the Bhagavatam, how Bhishma is leaving this world. He's remembering this incident, how he was fighting, how beautiful Krishna looked as he gazed at him, and he was shooting arrows. Bhishma was shooting his arrows at Krishna. And he was thinking himself more fortunate than Arjuna, because Arjuna could only see the back of Krishna, because Krishna was driving his chariot, and Bhishma saw his beautiful, Krishna's beautiful face, covered with the dust and the beads of perspiration, and his beautiful hair. And he saw the wounds on Krishna's body from having caught so many of the arrows meant for Arjuna. So at one point, Arjuna was in so much trouble, and Bhishma was going to kill him. And just as Bhishma was about to kill Arjuna, Krishna went rushing. He lifted up the wheel of the chariot, which was on the battlefield, and he went rushing towards Bhishma to kill him, just like a lion will rush towards an elephant. And when Bhishma saw that Krishna had taken up arms to protect his devotee, because he himself was such a great devotee, he surrendered. But he had kept his word. He forced Krishna to break his promise. And because Krishna became known as one who sometimes will break his promise, Krishna would not make this promise here himself, but rather he requested Arjuna to make the promise, because Krishna always keeps the word of his pure devotee. Even more powerfully and more strongly than he keeps his own word, he will keep the word of his pure devotee like Arjuna. So therefore Krishna says, "Kamteya pratijani hi name bhakta pranashyati." Declare it boldly, O son of Kunti, O Arjuna, that my devotee will never perish. Shipram bhavati dharmatma. He will very quickly become righteous, due to the fact that he is my devotee, due to his heart is burning with lamentation about his improprieties, and due to the fact of his determination to remain always, somehow or another, serving Krishna. And that is that that is his only value in life. The only is his existence. Due to that determination, and due to the other moods that we described, Krishna will uplift him. And this is a great glory of devotional service. And he will attain Shashvak Chantim Nagasti. He will attain the eternal abode, lasting peace. Prabhupada explains in the purport, the devotee puts the Supreme Personality of Godhead within his heart, and all sinful contaminations are naturally washed away. This thinking of Krishna is the essence of sadhana, again. Continuous thinking of the Supreme Lord makes him pure by nature. According to the Vedas, there's a certain regulation that if one falls down from his exalted position, he has to undergo certain ritualistic processes to purify himself. What is that called? Yes. So there are Vedic regulations. If you read the Manu Smriti or anything, you see if you... And it's so incredible how detailed actually the Vedic regulations are. If you do anything, practically if you pass gas at the wrong time, you have to say so many mantras for so many hours. If you do this, if you do that, every single thing is regulated. So much so, practically speaking, that in this day and age it is actually impossible to follow. But yet there's sinful reaction coming. And we don't perform any atonement for that. So here, for a devotee who performs accidentally and improper activity, there is no such prayaschitta or atonement. Because the purifying process is already there in the heart of the devotee due to his remembering the Supreme Personality of Godhead constantly. Therefore, the chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, should be continued without stoppage. One should always chant. That will protect the devotee from all accidental fall downs. He will thus remain perpetually free from all material contamination. Now, here is a commentary. Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur on the Shukram Bhavati Dhamma, one verse. Most wonderful. Such an irreligious man who is rendering service, how do you accept his service? His heart is polluted by lust, anger, greed. And this is his offering. Krishna. Very quickly he becomes Dharmatma. Chipram Bhavati Dharmatma. And then I accept. Krishna has not used the future tense. He will very quickly become Dharmatma, not in the distant future. Quickly. Why? Because he laments, remembering me, Krishna, again and again. And because of his lamentation, his heart burns. Please understand this point. Remembering Krishna again and again, and because he laments, his heart burns. Alas, alas, he thinks, there is no other devotee who is like me. I'm a black spot on the society of devotees. Again and again he curses himself. Shashvat, Chanti Nagatsiti. Again and again. I am so fallen, I am such a rascal. Dik Dik. I curse myself for being such a fool and a rascal. Krishna, Krishna, help. And then he becomes purified by condemnation of himself. So Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur has explained that. He continues. Arjuna asks, I understand that you are saying become Dharmatma. There is no dispute. But what if he remains Durachari? For his life, we should still consider him a sadhu? Krishna becomes angry. His eyes become enlarged. He says, Kaunteya Pratijani hi. My devotee never perishes. Even if he dies, he doesn't go down. Now when Krishna said like this, Arjuna put his hand on his head in worry. Many people will not agree. And Arjuna became morose. How can I help them understand? And Krishna says, take mridanga, kartals, and bang everything loudly and go where they are speaking like this and raise both hands in the air and make a vow, take an oath in my name and say like this, The devotee, the Lord's devotee, even if improperly behaving, will never perish.
What will happen then? Krishna says, and when you speak like this, all the people will fall at your feet and say, Maharaj, you are my guru.
Why doesn't Krishna take this oath himself? Later, in chapter 18, he himself takes the vow himself. Why here, doesn't he? The Lord, before speaking, he thought for a moment. I like my devotees very much, and I can't tolerate problems for them. I always protect my devotees, and on this battlefield I'll have to break my own vow with Bhima, with Bhishma. People only know this Bhagavad Gita after the battle, and people will say he spoke so many vows but he broke them. But they'll know Arjuna's words are like lines on a stone. Therefore Krishna thought Arjuna should say it. Commentary of Śrīla Vishnu on Thakurvati Thakurva's appearance day is tomorrow. Any questions at this time?
Yeah. Is that commentary of Vishnu Thakurvati Thakurva, is he recording an actual conversation that did take place? Or
when Vishnu Thakurvati Thakurva explains the meaning of these verses and what Krishna is saying and what Arjuna is saying, and he expands the Bhagavad Gita in that way, we accept it as completely authoritative.
So actually,
because Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says it, all the acharyas use this technique in the Bhagavatam commentaries. They connect the verses. They show how the verses connect to each other. So sometimes concepts are not in the verse, so they explain how the verse is answering a particular question posed in between, after the last verse and before this verse. So they expand the meaning of the Bhagavatam, and that is the job of such exalted devotees.
Do they have a contradictory different conversations going on between verses,
sometimes. Sometimes there's more and more. Sometimes one will say one thing and one another, but that doesn't mean contradictory. It means that one is looking at it from one particular angle and another is looking at it from another angle. Not that it's contradictory. They're all based on Siddhanta. The Siddhanta is never contradictory, although the details may be. There's one story, I can't remember the exact verse, but in one of Rupa Goswami's prayers in glorification of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna, there's one sloka where he glorifies Srimati Radharani as having hair, a braid in the back. He compares it to a snake, a blackish snake. So when Sanatana Goswami read that, he wasn't pleased, because he didn't like to see Srimati Radharani's hair compared to a black snake. So he was going with that. He was going to talk to Rupa Goswami about this, because he was elder to Rupa Goswami and Guru. Rupa Goswami respected him as Guru. And then suddenly, he saw before him Srimati Radharani on a swing with Lalita Devi, like that. And he saw her braid, and it was moving exactly like a black snake. And then the vision disappeared. And then he went to Rupa Goswami, bowed down, and said, everything that you say is exactly a revelation of the spiritual world. He understood the position of Srila Rupa Goswami. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Sri Sanatan Goswami, Srila Rupa Goswami, all the Goswamis of Vrindavan, Srila Prabhupada, they're not of this world. So it is hard for us who are of this world to understand their mind. And we may think, oh, they can do that, they can make up conversations, so I can make up conversations. But it is not like that. They're, what they do is not made up, it is revelation of Krishna. It's called Bhagavad Gita. Yeah, this commentary on the Bhagavad Gita.
I have a question. You said that a devotee who has fallen becomes purified by self-condemnation. Now, I've been told in the past that self-condemnation can be a form of sense gratification. So could you explain that?
Yeah.
More like exactly what it means.
See, if one... it wasn't just by the process of self-condemnation, but it was by the process of thinking of Krishna. So sometimes we become so absorbed in ourself, thinking, oh, I am so fallen. We're really just thinking about ourself. And we get more and more depressed and more incapable of doing service. Because we're just really thinking about ourselves and our problems and our fault. So that is Maya. And sense gratification, self-indulgence. But if we're thinking of Krishna, I am so fallen, only, and I don't deserve Krishna's mercy, I don't expect to get it, but I'm not going to give up Krishna's service, and Krishna is so glorious that I'm going to serve Him in all respects, in any case, regardless of my fallen condition, even if I have to, let me do any service, just don't take away some service, let me just do anything. So it's not just the self-condemnation that is the process, but it's one, the humility and self-condemnation, second, the always thinking about Krishna, and third, the resolute determination to continuously engage in devotional service. It is not self-indulgent, it is not sense gratification, it's pure. All three. Yeah.
Sometimes devotee, contemporary devotees, when they give a class or talk, they might repeat the meaning of the Bhagavad Gita, to even act as if they're a Krishna, you know, and say it like when they say, you know, Sarva Dharma Parijaga, when they say the translation, they might say it slightly different. And
like what? Give up all forms of religion and surrender to me.
We just repeat
Krishna's words. Krishna says, give up all forms of religion and surrender to Him, to me, and I'm also repeating that. So you should give up all forms of religion and surrender to me. Okay? I also don't know. What do you mean?
No, because I thought his question before was he was also getting at, did Krishna literally say those words? Obviously the mood is correct, we understand that. But I think he was wondering if Krishna literally says those specific words that Vishnu and Chakravarti Thakur used. And I think you were saying yes, but also I was thinking that sometimes devotees, they might, when they're feeling the mood of what Krishna is saying in the Bhagavad Gita, and they might say the words, paraphrase it, and you can feel that Krishna's there, but when I've used it to say it, means everything the exact same way that it's written here. But we don't necessarily think, oh, well, Krishna literally said that, but at the same time, Krishna is saying that as the meaning.
Yeah, so what's the question again?
Well, then his question again, but changing the words, maybe, and did Krishna literally say those words that Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur was using?
Well, I think they're asking if he actually said this in the battlefield.
I don't pin it right down. Right? So Krishna actually embedded. First of all, he wasn't speaking English. Right? That's the first problem. Right? So he actually said that who is translating it right there? And not only that, but they didn't have tape recorders in those days, right? It was 5,000 years ago. So how do we know? Even if Vishwanath Chakravarti can't accept that, that it's very hard for you to understand. Any other questions?
Some of us say something. Yesterday you mentioned that Krishna, as Bhagavan, gives them intelligence from within their heart. And then later in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Savasacharam is a mishap. I'm situated in his heart. What's the difference?
That with non-devotees, he gives intelligence, etc., according to the desires, their desires. But for the devotees, he doesn't reciprocate equally. He becomes obliged to the devotee and gives them more and more and more and more. He gives them, this Buddha Yoga is direct revelation of transcendental knowledge in his heart. If Krishna doesn't give us memory, a phone number, we forget. And we can't remember a phone number even. So we say, when we remember the phone number, we understand that it's Krishna's mercy that we remember. But that's actually not Krishna's mercy. Krishna's mercy is when he allows us to remember him, when he descends into our heart, and ultimately, it's this stage of Bhava Bhakti, where it's actually described that it's the descent of Samvit Ladini Shakti into the heart. And the reason why I didn't explain that, because it's a Bhagavad Gita class. It's the descent of Krishna's potency, his internal energy into the heart, his knowledge potency and bliss potency, the essence of Ladini and the essence of Sandhya. So that is completely different with how Krishna is interacting with conditioned souls, where they are also completely dependent on him, but this is completely different. It's something very, very, very special and very rare.
So, would it be like, along the lines of Savasacharam, Metta Smriti, the person wants intelligence.
That's not Buddha Yoga. The person wants...
The person wants to know the phone number. So Krishna gives him intelligence. But then the devotee is just interested in pleasing Krishna, just in serving. And Krishna says, well, let me give him intelligence and realization so that he can serve better.
What he's doing is connecting the devotee with the internal energy. That's what it means. It's making the connection completely secure within the heart, and then he is a real devotee.
So, do I ever get, you know, Krishna speaking to me like he says in that verse, or is it just...
Go to Vrindavan.
Yeah. Yeah, see, as Chaitya Guru he can do that, but this is again something on a different level. He gives so much inspiration in that way as Chaitya Guru.
But even on such a nearby level.
But this is on a different level again, a completely different level. This is on Bhava Bhakti, where one actually becomes a perfect devotee. That's the Dhammi Bodhi Yogam Chandina Mamasya. Tesham Satata Yuktanam Bhajitam Priti Bhavagam. Because of his worship in devotional ecstasy, Krishna becomes so attracted to that, he awards him with very high level devotion, which is also sadaka. It's only a practice stage for prema bhakti. Because Baba Bhakti is prema core, it's just the seeds of prema. Prema suryamsa, like a beam of sun. Is that sort of clear?
Yeah.
It's on a different level. Actually, it's on a different level. When one can't live a moment without Krishna, and one's eyes are torrents of tears are coming from his eyes, and just begging Krishna, Krishna, how could I be separate from you? Please give me your mercy. Yugayi tam namesha nam. Well, the verse before that is actually Baba Bhakti. Nayanam galarashvidaraya. Eyes are full of tears. Deep, deep ashakti attachment. I'm so fixed in that attraction and attachment to Krishna. Then if Krishna wants, when he wants, he will award Baba Bhakti. That is Siddha, and that we cannot get by anything we do. That is Krishna's mercy, by the mercy of the Vaishnava.
There's one Paramatma and one Bhagavan.
Yeah. This is Paramatma. Savasya Chambhutasana Vishwadasya. Paramatma. Ishvara Sava Bhutanam Vidishaya Arjuna Tishyati. Paramatma. Krishna. Huh?
The other one.
The other one.
Is Chambhutasana.
Huh?
The other.
Dami Bhuri Yogananda is something different. That's already there. So what's. Paramatma is already there. So what's the need of making the distinction? Saying that I give, what's he giving? He's giving full sambit, not full, but the essence of sambit is coming into the heart, that means cognizance, knowledge, chitta, good love being. And then we are alive. We are devotees.
Did Yoga Shama Maharaj give Krishna partiality to devotee and is it also same level as Bhakti Yoga
Shama? That's how Krishna, we're hearing about how Krishna reciprocates with his pure devotees. That's basically what we're hearing. Same thing. The Goswami's books are full of so many pastimes. So many pastimes. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has written Krishna Bhavanamrita. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswamiraj has written Govinda Lilamrita. These books are full of the revelation of the Goswamis. Raghunath Das Goswami has written books. Mukta Charit. So many books filled with the revelation of Krishna's pastimes. Prabhupada explains in the second canto that the true devotees see Krishna's pastimes in the heart like television. True devotee on this level. He is there, Krishna Loka. Actually there. So therefore he can write on this level and it is not speculation. And if he says something a little different from another acharya, you can be sure that the acharyas agree. There is no disagreement. But they can disagree superficially. Like Srila Jiva Goswami and Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur disagreed about Krishna's relationship with the gopis. Superficially they agree, but actually they agree.
When did Srila Goswami come into the Bhagavatam?
I can't remember exactly. You know? 1,000 years?
No.
You know? No.
More?
1,500 years ago? He says 1,500 years ago. He doesn't know either. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted him in all the commentaries in the Sampradaya agree with Sridhar Swami. They're all in concordance with Sridhar Swami.
It was more than 1,000 years ago.
I don't know.
I heard it was more than 1,000 years ago.
He heard, so he said,
I don't know.
They don't know either.
I heard it.
They heard it. Very good. Anyone else hear anything? Did you hear something?
I heard Lord Krishna is the mental engineer of everything. And he is doer.
Actually, he is doer.
I am not doer.
You are not doer. So therefore, why do they put you in jail? Why don't they put Krishna in jail when you robbed the bank? I didn't do anything. I once met a man. When I was in Hong Kong, I met this one man who was a very wealthy man. He was smoking a cigarette. He said, I'm not my body. My body was smoking the cigarette. What would you? So then, beat him with a stick. First of all, I didn't hit you, the stick didn't hit you. And not only that, I didn't hit you, I hit your body. That's the problem. Why are you so angry? I'm not angry, my body is angry. So this way, so much nonsense is going on. I'm sorry.
I've been there one year since Puri, then this also, it is doing?
No. Krishna, this is how it goes. The living entity is desiring. And Krishna is allowing him to fulfill his desire through the material. It's actually automatically happens through the material energy. But the material energy is inert. It is dead. So Krishna allows it. His sanction is there. Right? The living entity desires, the material energy allows him to do it, and Krishna sanctions it. And then the reaction comes to that, from that. So without Krishna's sanction, nothing can happen. The living entity cannot do anything on his own. So in that sense, Krishna is the doer. We preach that you are not the doer, not because we don't do anything and we're not responsible, because we think we're so powerful and that we're the one doing everything. Therefore we have to say, no, nonsense, you're not the doer. The 18th chapter described that there are five factors in action. One of them is the super soul. The place, the body, this and that. So the living entity, he can do, but not to a degree, not to get it done. He can desire, and the living, and Krishna, through the material energy, allows him to complete the activity, and he helps, gives him the reaction. Okay?
Arjun was asked to hide, and in his state, in his position. And why should I go to spiritual service? I am a social worker, social servant.
Yeah, so that means he's attached to his work.
Let me.
So you do it, so therefore we quote, we don't say, give up everything, we don't say, Sarvadhamam Pratyaja to him. We say, Yat Karosi Rajnasi. Yes, right, you have to learn how to do your work in such a way that Krishna will be pleased. By giving up the fruit, focusing your mind on it. Even though we want him to give up this nonsense work that isn't doing him ultimate good, but if he learns how to slowly become detached from this process of Sakam Karma Yoga or whatever and come up higher, then gradually he'll become purified. Right? This is what we've been speaking about. Okay. No. Okay, let's end the class and then...
And you have to test solution in the VHG office.
What?
And you have to test solution.
The answer is cheap. Where will you put it up?
Actually, I put one up here this morning, but it's been taken down by somebody. But there's another copy in the VHG office.
So what we do, oh, there's another copy. If anyone wants to see the answers to the test, it's in the VIG office, which is locked.
Yeah.
39.
It's locked. 45.
Yeah, it's 45.